Welcome to Mortgage Space. I'm your host, Alan Medeiros, and today we want to talk about all things getting ready, getting into contract, and what happens after you get your keys. So today we have Mike George with us, and Mike, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk to our podcast listeners. So, you know, off the podcast, you and I had just kind of been troubleshooting. What are some common do's, don'ts, and what to expect after you get your keys, right?
Yeah.
So we've been down this, goodness, probably between the two of us over 1,000 times. You know, we say that I've done this 100 times. I've done this, you know, a couple hundred times. We've done this over 1,000 times. And it really never stops to be exciting when we get to tell our clients that your loan is funded, we've recording confirmation, and you're a new homeowner. Isn't that one of the most satisfying things for us?
You betcha. You know, you look back and what we do for a living, it's kind of a tedious process we go through. But, you know, the old cliche of helping a family really, truly achieve the American dream and have home ownership, it's got to be on the top of the list.
Yeah. I think we've talked about this in the past. One of the core values we have as a company is serving others. It's understanding that what we do has a great importance to the family unit. And to those that are in transition that need stable homes and housing, but more importantly, that they have something that they can call their own, and that's home ownership, right? So I've heard a real estate agent say, you're gonna pay someone's mortgage. Is it gonna be the landlord's or is it gonna be yours,
yeah.
Right? So I wanna go ahead and talk about kind of the basics of what we are always looking for in a pre-qualification. And I've talked about another podcast, so for those listeners, refer back to the Mortgage Loan Process podcast and look at that and listen to it, excuse me. And you'll hear about the three C's. So I'll just go through it real quickly. As a loan officer, we evaluate on the front end of any transaction the three C's. Number one, the credit portion, to make sure that the consumer is credit worthy to meet the requirements for the specific loan program that they qualify for, right? And the general rule of thumb is open active trade lines 2 to 3 with no late payments last 12 to 24 months. Generally speaking, we like to see FICO scores above 640. If you're lower than that, there may be some programs, but we want to go ahead and try to shoot for 640 as a baseline. And based off of different types of scenarios, whether you're a first-time home buyer, a move-up buyer, you're a veteran or other purchasing in a different outside market like the USDA, there may be different credit requirements, and we can tailor those findings based off of your credit. But then the second C is capacity. That's the ability to repay the debt. Something we have in the mortgage industry that kind of came effect after 2010 was QM, right, or qualified mortgage. And this basically states that we need to meet all the requirements of state and federal regulations in order to make sure that you meet the debt-to-income ratio requirements, as well as the ability to repay that debt. And the last is the collateral, and collateral is just the house. That's what's holding up our loan. So I jokingly say to my client, a bank is not going to lend on a vehicle that's up on blocks. So we as banks want to make sure that the collateral that's holding up our loan is worth what we're going to finance it for. Generally speaking, we do carry the majority of the financing, and I would say the majority of the cases. There are some instances where some consumers can put 50% or greater down, and those are rare, but it does happen. But still, the bank is still taking some risk on, so they have a requirement that the collateral meet the requirements for the bank. So with that said, let's transition into now that we've finished your pre-approval, you've been looking for a house, you and your real estate professional have found a property, and now you guys are in contract. In California, we open something called an escrow. And in that process, you and I have always been very diligent as soon as escrow is open to try to contact the consumer and get updated financials, right? Get them in here so that we can get our disclosures completed and we get the process started. Because most of these escrows are 30 days, 45 days on the outside, and some as fast as 21 days or sooner. It just depends on the situation. But I know that if you're not actively engaged with your consumer from a week-to-week or month-to-month situation, if they're still looking, then I think that their motivation wanes a bit, but also they forget the process, right? They've kind of gone through this, and we really try to make this as smooth as possible, and the consumer really doesn't know all the things that go on behind the scenes. So I want to kind of bring up kind of an important piece, and these are the do items, meaning you want to continue to do these things once your escrow is open. Number one, always keep us updated with your financials. Meaning if you've gotten new pay stubs, you've gotten new bank statements, if you received a W-2 at the end of the calendar year, always bring those updated items to your loan officer. We're going to need them. The bank's going to ask for them. We just rather be proactive and just have it, right? Second thing is, be prepared that when you write a check to escrow for your earnest money deposit, which basically is telling the seller in good faith that they're going to hold that property off the market for you until the end of this escrow period, be prepared for that check to clear right away. So if it's a $1,000, $1,500, $2,000, $5,000 check, that check will be cashed immediately. And you need to be able to live without that money for the duration of that escrow. And if those funds are in escrow and it is going to be used for closing costs or down payment, it will be applied towards any monies due at the end. And that's just very important for consumers to understand, because some of them don't realize that if they're using a down payment assistance program or they have seller credits, that those monies will still be cashed. Somewhere, I think deep in their mind, they think that, oh, I don't need that money. It's not going to be used because I'm going to get a refund for it. But they don't realize that money's going to be cashed. And that could affect somebody's day-to-day operations. So it's important for us to consider that. Next is, remember that all funds in a real estate transaction will need to be verified. So you always want to make sure that if you write a check to escrow and it clears your account, that we get a transaction history that shows that that check or wire to escrow has cleared your account with the balances afterwards. That gives us the ability to credit you so that it's no longer required at closing for the amount that you put into escrow. That could be $2,000, $5,000, whatever the amount was. And then also for us to be able to give you a better closing number, because we're talking thousands of dollars here, and for some people even more than that. So we want to make sure that we're giving you as accurate data as we have available. You do want to pay all of your current bills on time. Do not stop any payments on any accounts. Do not pay your rent, especially if you're in a situation where you are renting. We always will verify that your obligations are still on time and they're paid as agreed. Do let us know if something changes. Life happens. Mike, I know that you and I had discussed this. There have been situations where people have switched jobs during a transaction. Don't do that, right? That's going to be your topic card, but don't do it. If you are considering changing positions and it's a lateral movement or a different company, it's a pay raise, but you're doing the same thing, talk to us. We can advise you on how that could be a possibility, but we don't recommend it. But it is a possibility, but let's talk about it. If you communicate with us, it'll give us less opportunity for failure and less likelihood of just hiccups during the transaction. If you have questions, we're here for you. We have a fiduciary responsibility to protect our clients. We're dealing with a lot of very personal information. We're dealing with their financials, their credit, all the things that kind of make them worthy for us to be able to lend to them as a bank. And if they're not transparent with us, it's very difficult for us to engage with the bank's underwriters or any other parties involved that require this information if we weren't given the information to begin with. And nobody likes to be in that position, because it's very stressful and it creates a lot of tension, and we just don't want our consumers to have that. So just be proactive. If something has changed in your financials, you had to spend some money that you had for assets set aside, something's going on at work, some major life event has happened, please just let us know. Do be proactive. Are there any other due items you think that I missed, Mike, that we should talk about?
No, I think the biggest point is just make sure there's good, clear, quality communication, because we try to represent our borrowers, you know, with the due diligence that is required and that we would want to. And if for some reason, as you said, something happens and we don't know about it, then there's really not much we can do to assist our clients in preventing that.
Would you agree with me in saying that banks do want to lend money?
Absolutely, absolutely.
But at the end of the day, they still have very specific guidelines that they need to adhere to, and that allows us to be insured properly for the loans that close, as well as give our borrowers the best chance for success. We don't want our borrowers to not be able to afford their payment or be in a situation where it's a financial hardship for them to have a mortgage. This should be a part of their life, not the only thing they work for, right?
You bet. You betcha for sure.
So let's transition to the do not do things during a transaction when they actually get into contract and they're going through escrow. What are some do not do things, Mike?
Well, that's funny you should ask, you know, because with the years that we've had in this business and the different loan processes that we've been through with our clients, most of these do nots we've experienced. So that's one of the reasons we're sharing with you today, because by doing some of these things, it can affect the outcome of whether you get those keys or not. We want to do everything in our power to assure you get those keys on time for that home that you've been looking for and that you've been working for. You know, one of the things Alan alluded to is one of our job requirements is to make sure we validate all funds for a mortgage transaction. So one of the things that we would like to not see is maybe you've got two or three different accounts. Maybe you've got a 401k or an IRA, checking, savings, any accounts like that. And we have to verify where all the funds come from. Alan's alluded to your earnest money deposit and validating that those funds are in escrow. What we don't want you to do is start moving money all around. Because say, for instance, you've got money in one account, and you transfer to another account, and then you transfer to another account in preparation for the close. Well, now what we're going to have to do to validate those funds is we're going to have to develop a paper trail of the funds from start to finish, which could be very antagonizing on your part. Because that way we're going to have statements for all the different accounts that we've referenced and all the movement of those funds, including the transfers, the transactions from one account to the other. So leave your funds where they are. And if you are going to move them, make sure you communicate with your loan officer just to make sure that you're aware of what information we're going to need by moving those funds so that it doesn't upset the process as we go through it. And again, we don't want to add any stress to your life as we go through this. We want to keep it as uncomplicated as possible. But when you start moving funds around, it becomes a lot of paperwork that we have to do. You know, the other thing is referencing, Alan alluded to, looking at credit and credit history and things of that nature. One of the things that we don't want you to do is go out and make any major purchases. Okay, now we're in contract for that beautiful new home you're looking for, and oh my gosh, we need a refrigerator. Oh, we need a washer and dryer. Oh my gosh, I think we need a new bedroom set. Well, let's think about this for a minute. We have pre-qualified you with certain debts that you already have and a proposed house payment that you're looking forward to. And any changes in that credit history could upset that apple cart and make the debt to income ratios not be at the level they need to be for your qualification for the loan. So just hold off, wait till you get those keys, then do what you need to do to make sure you've got your house well equipped. The other thing you don't want to do, referencing credits, you don't want to open any new accounts and you don't want to close any new accounts, because again, either one of those things can affect your credit one way or the other. And the one thing that you have to remember is being the bank is taking the risk for a loan against that property and the credit worthiness that you've already proven. They have the ability and right to repull your credit before you close escrow. And if all of a sudden they see some changes like an open account or a closed account, and it potentially could affect your credit score, that affects your credit worthiness and the risk that the bank is taking for this loan, and it could affect your close of escrow. So again, we don't want you to make any changes like that. The other thing too is referencing credit is, say for instance, you had an old collection on there from some copay that just got missed a couple of years ago at the doctor's office, and your loan officer has advised you, don't do anything about that collection. You're already pre-qualified, you're ready to go. That means they've gone through the process to make sure that collection is not going to affect you getting the keys to that house. And so we don't want you to change or pay anything or address anything on that credit report that your loan officer and you have not discussed. Because again, we're here to assist you in every possible way that we can to get those keys that we both know you want. And we want to make sure that you don't make a decision in your finances, either with your accounts, your credit, or so forth, that is going to affect the ability of those keys to be handed over to you for the future of your family. So those are some of the major things that we really don't want you to do. And again, alluding to one of the things that Alan said, don't withhold anything. You know, family happens, life happens. Communicate with your loan officer. Make sure they know if there's any changes, because by not telling them, again, it could affect their ability to help you close escrow. So really, Alan, those are the main things, the don'ts that we don't want to see in a mortgage transaction.
Absolutely. Some other things that just came to mind, though, as we were talking about this, Mike, is don't deposit cash.
No, this is true.
If you have cash lying around and you think, oh, you know what, I've already got the loan approval back, I'm good to go, and you decide to take that money and deposit in the bank, you may have caused a little bit of a hiccup, because unsourced funds are very, very difficult in a mortgage transaction, are never really acceptable forms of deposits. So as a result, if you have cash lying around, just spend the cash, don't deposit it. We don't need to see it. If you have a reason for that deposit, discuss it with your loan officer. It's just so important that we don't have any just last minute issues with your transaction. We really want to successfully close that so that you're able to get your keys. So moving on to the last segment of our podcast today, I want to talk about, now that you've closed on your home, you've recorded the deed, you have your keys, what are some good things to do after closing, and what are things that you should expect? So I'll go ahead and start this off by saying, whenever you close on a transaction, you likely will have signed with a notary a set of loan documents. And trust me, we've jokingly said when people come into the office to sign certain disclosures prior to the DocuSign options that we have now. Say, have you done your risk exercises, right? The whole idea is that you're going to sign your name literally almost 100 times during a loan transaction. And when you sign with a notary, they're going to have a packet. Contained in that packet are a couple of very important documents that I strongly recommend that you pull to the top of the document stack and store in a safe place. Number one would be your first payment letter, meaning it will tell you where to mail your first payment, when it's due, okay, and how much to send. The second thing is a copy of your note. The note is the financial agreement that you have with the bank. It tells you the terms, when your loan starts, when the expiration of the last payment is, who the beneficiary of your loan is, and what are the terms, and certain guidelines that are required for it to be in force. The third is a copy of your deed of trust. Now, the deed of trust copy that you have within your document set will not be fully executed. That is going to be your record. You can sign your own copy, but it's not going to be the official one that's recorded with the county that you're in. But it is something that's important that you have a copy of. And just shortly, we'll talk about how to get a clean copy of that and some things that you should avoid. But those are the three top things that you should have at your fingertips, put in a stack that's, you know, like I said, available and accessible to you. The last piece that I think is also important is going to be your closing statement. Your closing statement is very important for two reasons. Number one, it is the summary of all costs and expenses that go into the transaction. It shows the sales price, how much you've put in, what your contribution was, what details were necessary for you to close your transaction. But it also may be something that you can use for taxes. So hold on to that. You may need to reference that. So those are the items that I would say the first thing you should do after you close on your house. The next thing is this. You want to be proactive about making sure that your first payment gets to the servicer. There is this transition period that happens from the time you close, get your keys. You've got all this excitement of moving, getting your house ready, getting in, and getting, say, your utilities started, getting your mailbox keys, if that's the way your house is set up. And then all of a sudden you think, I have to make a mortgage payment. How do I do this? Again, if you did what I just recommended, you'll have that at the top of your list. But your loan may be transferred or sold. And this is what I want to bring up. So, Mike, you field these calls. I field these calls. What commonly happens in transactions after we close from a servicing standpoint?
You bet. Well, all of a sudden the clients get this letter in the mail. And it says, okay, well, your loan was closed with Agape Mortgage, and guess what? We just sold it to ABC Servicing. And they go, oh no, now what do we do? Well, so one of the things you want to do is call your professional and make sure that you have clarity on what you truly do need to do with that first payment. Most loans that are sold are typically within the first 30 to 90 days. So just be prepared that one of the documents you sign with your loan papers is the fact that they have the right to transfer that loan to another bank. Your payment isn't going to change. The terms of the loan will never change, but who you write your check to can. So if you have any question at all, make sure you call your loan professional and make sure that you have clarity on where that payment does need to go, especially if you've received multiple letters after close of escrow identifying who is actually going to service and receive that payment.
Now, I want to bring this point up. Some people take it as a personal offense if their loan is sold. I want to assure the listeners here, it is nothing personal at all. Banks are businesses. Servicing rights are sold. We as originators start your loan, and we do service many of our loans. But there are times when we do sell a portion of our servicing off. But we are still here as Lenders for Life for you. We really want to make sure that you're aware that we are here to help you. So if those transitions happen, don't be alarmed. Don't take any personal offense. This is part of the mortgage industry, and it's very common practice, okay? The next thing is that you're going to receive a lot of junk mail that looks very, very, very official. And I want the listeners of this podcast to know that we as lenders do not sell your information. It becomes a matter of public record when you become an owner. We as a lender become named as the lender of record because we're the ones that recorded the deed of trust. So with that public information, there are some very creative and very official looking documents being mailed to you. And when that happens, it's very, very common for you to be confused. So reach out to your loan officer. Reach out to the loan professional and ask them questions about, you know, is this something that I really need to be worried about? Is this valid? And a lot of times, this information should, I think legally, they should or must be required to disclose that this is a solicitation, although it may be in very, very fine print someplace on there. But that's really the importance of communicating even after you've closed your transaction with your loan officer or the person that helped you with your loan, because there's just so many confusing things. We do this every day. At the beginning of the podcast, we talked about over 1,000 transactions between the two of us. And really, when you do something so many times, we see it as normal. And we have to step back and say, oh, that is new to them. We didn't realize that. So we have to kind of podcasts like this to just give information. But I want to bring up a topic that becomes very important too, and that's with property taxes. So can you define the difference, Mike, between a secured bill and then a secured supplemental bill for our listeners?
You bet. You know, and most of the borrowers, they have their taxes and insurance included with their payment. Some elect to pay them separately. But regardless, now that you own real property that's attached to the ground, you're going to get a property tax bill. Well, the secured property tax bill is associated with a percentage of the purchase price that you've paid for that property. You know, typically around Kern County, it's about 1.25%, but it could vary because of different areas of Bakersfield. But then the other thing that you want to be prepared for is the fact that if the previous owner of the property was taxed less than you are being taxed only because the value of the property was not anywhere close to where your purchase price was. Well, the Kern County tax collector doesn't run right out and assess the property the day you purchase that house and get everything all squared away. No, what they're going to do is over the next 1 to 3 months, they're going to assess what property taxes are due based on the old value of the property and your purchase price, and that's called supplemental taxes. Now, please remember that if your taxes and insurance are included with your payment, then your tax renewal will be taken care of by your lender that's servicing your loan. But if you receive a supplemental tax bill, that will be your responsibility to make that payment to make sure that those taxes are brought current and that you don't have any liens or encumbrances put against your property in the future. And again, if you have any questions on when you receive a property tax bill, because we get dozens of calls around tax season, and just call your loan professional and make sure that they outline oh no, that's regular, that's included with your payment, just save those records for when do you do your taxes for the year. Oh, or if it says supplemental tax bill, that yes, those, that's the difference between the old value of the property and the new value of the property based on your purchase price. And yes, you are responsible for those taxes. So your loan officer should have prepared you for that when you go into a purchase transaction, so that there's no surprises, because we want to make sure that after you get those keys, you don't want to have any unhappy things happen afterwards.
Absolutely. So I'll give you a quick example, because just to clearly define this kind of more concrete terms. The secured bill is the bill that would be paid for by your servicer if you included taxes and insurance in your payment. That basically means that when the property is assessed for the complete year, your loan will have set aside 1/12 of that tax bill in your monthly payment. And when that bill comes due, it will be paid by your servicer. The secured bill is different from the supplemental, because supplemental is a one-time bill. The lender would not have had record of the supplement, because it technically wasn't done until after you sold, were purchasing that property. And they're basically giving you a tax bill for the difference between what the previous owner owned it at and what they newly assessed it at with your purchase price. So that bill is going to be smaller, hopefully. Now, we have had situations where somebody owned the property for 45 years and the tax bill was, say, on $40,000 and you're buying the house at $225,000. Well, there's a pretty big spread there, so you may have a pretty substantial supplemental tax bill. So these are kinds of things, again, Mike just made that point, that it's a good idea to talk with your loan officer, because they should have had a discussion about this with you, because the lender would not have received that supplemental bill. But be assured, when the full bill comes in addition to the supplemental, that secured bill will have that included in there. So, great. We went through a lot of stuff in a very short amount of time, Mike. Is there anything that you think that we didn't cover that you think we should talk about?
No, I think we've done a pretty good job. You know, I think probably the takeaway on this is just make sure you have good, fluid communication.
Absolutely.
You know, we all go through life changes. We all go through finance changes and things of that nature. And as long as we have good, fluid communication, then we can help you with the outcome, so that it is when you receive those keys and that big smile on your face.
Absolutely. Well, if you are listening to this and you've just purchased property, congratulations. And again, just reiterate, communicate. And if you have questions, please leave us some feedback. Give us a call, 661-496-9311. Have a great day.